Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
So, Pat, did WWE just make Fastlane's main event more entertaining?
Probably, but they also made it more like the Raw main event. They only need to add one more guy, and they can do it next week.
What does it become if it's a seven? Is it like seven match, seven way heaven? I don't know. Do we have a seven way match?
It's a spectacular seven way. I don't know. I don't know what you call that.
All right. So we have John Cena in the mix. This is part of John Cena's journey, trying to create a path to WrestleMania. He failed at the Royal Rumble. He failed at Elimination Chamber. He was told the Undertaker match cannot happen. And so now he's, as a free agent, got over to SmackDown and inserted himself into the conversation and wanted an opportunity in the land of opportunity. And Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan agreed to give him an opportunity to earn a shot at Fastlane by defeating, well, to face AJ Styles in the main event, and he did, and he won clean in a, I think it was just over 20-minute match. Pat, what do you think about this as the way to tell the story that of John Cena getting now an opportunity at Fastlane? He could go three pay-per-view main events in a row as a failure before we finally get around to potentially an Undertaker match or maybe a swerve, and Cena ends up winning the championship and not facing Undertaker.
Well, that would be something. It would. That's the story they're telling. And you know, John Cena coming so close to getting a major match for WrestleMania, but just can't do it. Now, this is despite the fact that the entire building in Los Angeles, well, yeah, it's half full, but the half of the building that was there was yelling at Shane McMahon, you know, during John Cena's talk that it's Rusev Day. They wanted to see Cena versus Rusev at WrestleMania. You know, why not make that match? I don't know. Is this too complicated?
That they want Rusev against who at WrestleMania?
John Cena. Or, well, anybody, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, does John Cena, I ask that because does John Cena really want to get booed out of the building against Rusev? That could be bad.
Well, I mean, he's going to get booed out of the building against Undertaker, so. There is a big difference, yes.
I would rather get booed against somebody who is a legendary popular figure than get booed against a wrestler cast as a heel who is a cult figure who is getting over when he's not supposed to. There's a little more embarrassment to that.
Yes, there is.
Yeah, but
yeah. Plus, he'll probably get a bigger check for wrestling the Undertaker. So that part makes sense. Yeah.
John's got $55 million in the banks, according to Celebrity Net Worth. He'll be fine with a little smaller payday if it's best for business. But we'll see. I mean, we're not having an uneventful road to WrestleMania. And they're keeping things interesting and telling the story, letting it unfold week by week. I did run a poll on Twitter, at PW Torch, by the way. If you're not following us on Twitter, please do so, at PW Torch. And I said, will John Cena beat AJ Styles tonight? And 18% predicted, we've got very accurate Twitter followers here, very good at prognosticating, 18% said Cena would win. So congratulations to the less than one-fifth of you.
So you bet against John Cena winning a singles match?
Well, they did, yeah. Okay. 40% thought Cena would lose. This is 173 votes. It's definitive, Pat. 31% said there'd be a disputed finish. And 11% just thought the match would not happen. So that is a surprise finish. I mean, I'm actually surprised by that poll. I thought once that was announced that Cena would end up in that match, give Fastlane something extra that match needed. You know, I just didn't think, you know, with Corbin and Ziggler. I mean, they're trying to tell an interesting story with KO and Sammy and Corbin and Ziggler and Styles, but it wasn't what it needed to be. To be a fresh pay-per-view main event. And adding Cena to the mix, it adds something to the match, because if they can convince the average, you know, the majority average, whatever you want to call their typical viewer, that this could mean Cena versus Nakamura, and Cena might win because the Undertaker match is off, that'll make Undertaker eventually coming out, if he does, all the more exciting, because it'll seem like WWE totally swerved them away from thinking that was inevitable. And I thought they did a nice job tonight with Cena and Nakamura crossing paths at ringside and pointing at the WrestleMania sign. I like Nakamura's way of gesturing and pointing better than John Cena's. And I thought they did a good job of kind of creating that visual suggestion or symbolism of those two headlining WrestleMania.
I like that also. I don't think that's how they're gonna. I don't think that's how they're gonna promote Fastlane. I think they're gonna come on the kickoff show and say, "Hey, you know, if you order Fastlane tonight, you know, as part of your free month of WWE Network, you'll get WrestleMania for free too."
Yeah, well, they might, but I do give them credit for promoting, creating the idea that Cena and Nock might main event. I mean, you don't want to create the sense that something might happen and only go in so half-heartedly that you're giving away that it's not going to happen. You want to create in your own narrative the idea that, hey, we're going with this as if it's going to happen, so that you don't know if this is one of the things that's going to happen. So just giving a little credit for that. Let's set the table here, because this is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, our second show of the week here on the Red Brand. Later this week on the flagship on Thursday, I'll be joined by Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net. And then on Interview Friday, got a special guest, a former WWE creative team member. And we'll talk about that later on in the program. First time appearance on the show. But I am joined right now by longtime Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter columnist, PW Torch livecast host. And he wears many other titles, wears many other hats. It is Pat McNeil. Welcome back, Pat, to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show.
Thanks, Wade. And by the way, I the secret's out. I know why you invited me to tonight's show, and I want to say thank you.
Oh, and why did I invite you? What's your guess?
Because at midnight, it will officially be my 17th anniversary working for Pro Wrestling Torch.
Wow. At midnight even. Awesome.
Yeah, so so you didn't send a cake, but my sponsor sent a box of razor blades. So, you know, so that was very nice of them.
All right. Well, excellent. So let's open up the phone lines here. Let people know that if you want to call, we will take your call. Our number is 347-215-8558. Since we split off the two feeds, so we've got our Red Brand, that's the post shows covering Raw and SmackDown. We're live right after Raw and SmackDown on Monday nights and Tuesday nights. And then on Thursday and Friday, we're at Podcast One with our flagship and our weekly interview. So be sure you're subscribing to both. If you've stumbled upon us here on the Red Brand, we have an identical logo with my face on it, Wade Keller, in big words, just like on SmackDown when all the wrestlers talk. But it's a blue logo, and that's the Podcast One show twice a week. So be sure to subscribe to both and refresh both, the red one earlier in the week and the blue one later in the week. Let's begin taking calls, because one of the great parts about the new format is we brought back some live caller interaction, so we'll let the conversation be steered in our first segment here, partially by our callers. And then later on, we're going to be joined by an on-site correspondent who was at Staples Center, and we'll get the lowdown of what happened off-air and an assessment of how the crowd reacted and some things that happened before and after SmackDown went off the air. He's also watching 205 Live right now as we record this. And then we'll also answer some email questions later on in the show. If you're listening to the live stream but are choosing not to call, but you do want to contribute or react to what we're saying about SmackDown, you can email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That email address is also where you should send your questions for the Thursday flagship edition of the show, which I record with Jason Powell on Wednesday. So get your question in right away. And that's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Let's go to the first call of the day, first call of the night here. And Pat, this is special, 773. You are on. 773. Hey, Boris. Did you think you were never going to talk to me again?
No.
Oh, you did. You thought you would talk to me someday.
No. I eventually, just like Josh and Roman Reigns, we will meet again.
All right.
And what would an anniversary be without me?
That's true. Thank you, Boris. I know the problem. Boris was waiting for the sound effect to go off before he started talking. That was
frivolity with me.
Right.
All right. So, Boris, make it good. You have had 7 months since you've called this show. I want you to bring it. I want you to be concise, make a good comment, ask a good question, show the newer listeners what this call-in format is all about.
want to rant about we're going for the fourth time with Roman Reigns.
Well, we're talking, Boris, you're already breaking a rule here. This is the post-SmackDown show. We talk SmackDown. Last night was Raw.
Back here again. Come on. Let me finish up. And John Cena running from Raw.
Okay.
SmackDown.
Right.
And threatening to take our dream match of Nakamura versus AJ on the biggest stage.
Can you imagine?
About that.
That'll go over great, I think.
Yeah. I don't think people think that's going to happen. Although I do have to say WWE's done such a lousy job building up Styles Nakamura to this point. I mean, it's on its own a cool match for people who know their history and saw their match together back at the Tokyo Dome a few years back. But still, yeah, I don't think the average everyday viewer is thinking it's a dream match, unfortunately. But that's on WWE.
I'm glad that they remembered that Shinsuke Nakamura's on SmackDown this week.
I know. And Rusev.
Yeah.
Yes. I love the Rusev Day chant during the Shane McMahon segment at the top of the show. And Shane did not say duly noted this week because he took some heat for duly noting that fans wanted Rusev and then he didn't book him for the next couple weeks.
Well, that was duly noting. Yeah.
Yes. All right. So, Boris, anything else?
Do you think Dave Bryan left because he figured this was going to be a terrible show?
Do I think what? I couldn't hear it.
Do you think Daniel Bryan left early because he knew the show would be terrible? That's all I had.
All right, thanks, Boris. Actually, I thought he said Dave Brown, and I was like,
When was Dave Brown? I saw Josh, what's his name, but I didn't see Dave Brown, yeah.
Yeah, the former broadcast partner of Lance Storm on Memphis Wrestling. Lance Russell. Oh, God. Hi, Lance.
That's why I'm here.
Hi, Lance Storm. Lance Russell on Memphis Wrestling for a couple decades. So, anyway, Daniel Bryan. That was weird, saying Daniel Bryan wants to leave early. I mean, it was, I guess it's sort of funny, but don't you kind of, I don't think Dallas Cowboy fans want to see Jerry Jones, getting out of the luxury suite in the middle of the second quarter in a 7-7 game. So he can go home and be with his grandkids. That's just weird. I don't know.
Hey, Wade, I want to leave the podcast early tonight because I want to go upstairs and hang out with my daughter and wife.
I know. It didn't mean anything. I haven't really thought about it until Boris brought it up again. But was there some storyline reason that Daniel Bryan couldn't be around?
Well, I guess they didn't want him there when Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn ran amok. That's the only thing I can think of.
I know it's probably an inside joke, but we'll see.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to our next call. Area code 408. You are on live. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, this is Antonio. I'm calling from Hayward in California, near Oakland.
All right, cool. This is totally stupid, but I want you to move to San Antonio because I want a caller who's Antonio from San Antonio. I think that'd be fun.
I thought about that. I was actually at San Antonio for the Rumble last year.
Okay.
So, yeah, I would love to move there. It's a lot cheaper than the Bay Area, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But my problem tonight is with John Cena going over AJ Styles. I feel like they could have maybe booked a different match for John Cena to get in the championship match at Fastlane instead. I just think so close to WrestleMania to have AJ Styles lose so clean to John Cena seems like not doing a very good job protecting the champion on SmackDown. What do you guys think?
I'm glad you brought it up because it's, we can joke around about different things and talk about the booking and their strategy of trying to make it seem like it's believable Cena will win and all that. But if Cena doesn't win at Fastlane, he's got to win clean one-on-one over AJ Styles. And I do think symbolically that diminishes the dream match aspect of AJ and Nakamura. I mean, they have just defined down AJ a little bit. I mean, it's John Cena, but still, AJ isn't, he's the guy who runs the place. And then John Cena comes over, essentially a Raw guy for the last 6 months, comes over to SmackDown. And in this first opportunity, just takes care of AJ clean. 1, 2, 3 in 22 minutes. And, for a brand that's built around AJ to just have him go down like that in a TV match with no notice. I will not be surprised if there's not some pretty strong backlash against that. And I do think it does, Pat, take a little something away from AJ and Nakamura if that is eventually the match. And I mean, it does make you wonder, are they going to just do Cena Nakamura and move AJ, into you know, a U.S. title match against Orton or something. I don't know.
Well, maybe AJ can wrestle the Undertaker.
Yeah, maybe Undertaker Cena can't happen because Undertaker's scared of Cena, but he's not scared of Styles.
I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, that'd be a good consolation for Cena fans.
It could be worse, yeah.
There'll be some riots in the meantime, but yeah.
But I was thinking maybe John Cena can take the pinfall at Fastlane. Maybe lose clean to AJ Styles there. But I don't really see that happening, but I mean, that's a possibility there.
I mean, would you have rather, Pat, had some sort of... I mean, their distraction finishes are so overdone. I mean, it just happens all the time. And, just Kevin Owens yelling at Baron Corbin, you know, pay attention to the match. Quit getting so easily distracted. It was like, I loved, KO doing that. But there's part of me that just thinks with all these moving parts, they so easily could have protected AJ. I mean, they could have had Corbin come and sit at ringside and Ziggler come and sit at ringside and then Kevin and Sammy sit at ringside and then Shane McMahon on the phone calling Daniel Bryan and saying, see what you did, and then he comes to ringside and then there's a distraction and that leads to some sort of excuse for Styles losing. They just had enough moving parts. They certainly could have come up with something. Would that be better, or are we hypocrites because we complain a lot about how they just don't own their finishes and do clean finishes often enough?
No, it was a good match. It was a better match this way. I'm pleasantly surprised because I was expecting that there would be this wild, you know, Owens and Zayn run in. There's this double count out, and then Rusev runs in, and then next week we have to have Rusev versus John Cena versus AJ Styles, and if AJ loses, both of them are added to make it a sincere seven way or something. You know the way WWE has been booking for the past couple months.
Yeah. Well, Antonio, how do you feel? Do you think that there's something they can do at Fastlane to redeem the situation for AJ if they still do AJ Nakamura, or is this kind of damage that's hard to undo?
Well, I think if AJ gets a victory over Cena at Fastlane at the ending of the match, I think I personally would feel a little bit better about tonight. Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know if that's happening.
No, I agree that is the solution. I don't think it. I still think losing one on one is not something you can get back in a six-pack challenge, but it would go a long way to doing it. It just won't go all the way.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Anything else, Antonio?
Really quick. You guys mentioned last week about, you know, Cody Rhodes and Dolph Ziggler, have they gone different routes? And after tonight and after whole week last week, thinking about it and tonight watching SmackDown, I started to think, I think Dolph Ziggler would have done better in the indies than Cody would have. I actually, not a dig at Cody Rhodes because I love his whole family. I wish him all the best, but he, as a performer, he hasn't really improved that much in my opinion. His character work has always been great. I really don't think he. I think you said it, Wade, that he hasn't really had a match that made me feel like, oh wow, I want to subscribe to New Japan or Ring of Honor to watch him wrestle. But Dolph Ziggler, I think he would have done better than Cody. What do you think?
I think Ziggler would be a better fit in Ring of Honor or New Japan than Cody from a in ring standpoint. I think Cody's brought personality and verve and color to ROH and New Japan and the storylines he's been part of in a way that I think is probably better than Ziggler because I think Cody has more of a personality than Dolph Ziggler. But I think Ziggler would have gained a lot of valuable experience outside of the WWE bubble in the environment in which he's been, you know, born and raised as a pro wrestler, at least. And so it's an intriguing question. I mean, because both of them, I think, are benefiting. Ziggler would have had better matches. And I would have been curious to see him and be able to work under different parameters in a different style against wrestlers who are in his realm athletically, but have him just get to go and perform his craft in a more sports-like environment. I'm disappointed he resigned with WWE just selfishly because I would have rather seen him go there. And then I think he could have come back after a year or two and in a better position. I'm still not sold on him as a character in the main event scene. The idea that AJ and Cena would let their guard down around him is insane. At what point did he turn babyface where they would not be suspicious of him? I think he's been booked terribly, and that's not his fault. I mean, I guess you can say he should speak up more with his years at the company. But yeah, I mean, Pat, your thoughts. It is an interesting discussion about who would benefit more or fit in better.
I think it depends. I want to see more of whether Dolph Ziggler can cut a promo outside of, when he's not, when his verbiage isn't being controlled by the other, by the WWE creative department. I think that's really the tell, because I mean, Cody being the king of the three star match, as some people call him, he's cutting promos. He knows how to talk. He always knew how to talk. And I just want to see if Ziggler got that. I think his stuff in WWE when they give him the microphone is so weak, and I don't know whether that's by accident or design. I want to see him. If he could cut a promo and show he could cut a promo, then I think I think he would actually gain value, and WWE would want him back at some point.
Antonio, appreciate the call.
Thanks. Have a good night.
We'll talk to you again. I'll announce now, because it ties in. We're going to talk this Friday with former, and this was in the infancy of the post-Russo Ferrara era and the beginning of the Hollywood writer era, with Stephanie McMahon in charge back in 2001. We're going to talk to fellow Podcast One host Christian Harloff on Interview Friday this week. And It'll be the first of two parts. We'll do it the next 2 weeks. He was at Raw Monday night, only his third show since leaving WWE back in 2001, after a short but fascinating stint behind the scenes as one of the first young new writers without history in the wrestling business, but just fandom, who got a job. And he talks about how he got the job, interactions with Paul Heyman, Bruce Pritchard, Michael Hayes, Rock's personal assistant, Brian Gewirtz, and The Rock and Stone Cold. And on and on. And he also has some comments on what we're just talking about with Ziggler, the over-reliance on exactitude with scripting of wrestlers, and how that – what stage that was at when he was around, and how he notices that it has changed, and to what degree. But a really fascinating conversation with him. We spend the first half talking about his time in WWE. And then the second installment will be just talking current events with him. And it's fascinating because he was around in the pre-Cena era working for WWE. And then he just was kind of bitter and stopped watching entirely when it didn't work out. And missed the entire John Cena era until this last year or two when he got back into it. And So it's interesting talking to someone who is looking now through the – it's sort of like, your kids are growing up, but the family maybe sees them once a year. And they're like, wow, you're growing up so fast. And the parents are like, well, we didn't really notice any change. Is it really that different? For him, he went away for like 15 years, but was a lifelong fan, started watching wrestling at WrestleMania 3 actually Hulk Hogan and Sheik. But he became a huge fan of Randy Savage and Rick Steamboat at WrestleMania 3. So it's a really fascinating conversation with him. And he now is a fellow podcast host here at Podcast One, running the Schmoes Know Movie Show podcast. So check that out if you haven't yet. S-C-H-M-O-E-S, the Schmoes Know Movie Show at Podcast One. So that's coming up this Friday. So I hope you will all tune in, subscribe, and download that show. But first we'll have Jason Powell with us on the flagship show on Thursday. So you have that to look forward to, and it's a good conversation. I look forward to editing and getting it all put together for this Friday as the week progresses. Pat, let's try to take another call. 347-215-8558 is the number if you want to get in line on the phone banks, or else Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com if you want to contribute a question or comment that way. Let's go to 615 next. 615, thanks for holding. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade and Pat. This is Kenny from Tennessee. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Kenny. What's on your mind tonight?
First off, I want to congratulate Pat on a happy 17th anniversary. And who knows, maybe you can get a Rolex watch real cheap for that.
I'll buy one in Manhattan for you.
There you go.
On the streets.
Anyway, I do, since we've been talking about SmackDown Live, and you mentioned about, the words and the pop-ups, it's quickly, SmackDown Live in that aspect is definitely becoming more and more like watching Batman 66 in some ways, and not in a good way at times, especially now that, you know, we're seeing the New Day wars being popped up. I can only imagine that it, next time Vince McMahon ever shows up on TV, then no chance in hell will pop up big. But other than that, I mean, I really did like the show, believe it or not. And a lot of it was just, you know, the matches and the quality of it, I felt, you know, it was okay. I mean, I'm glad that we have a match that ended clean. But the real surprise, I think, of all the matches that I saw was just the Nakamura versus Aiden English match. You know, and I think you wrote on your report they're doing real hard to keep Rusev heel when really they, I agree that you've got something really good. And the fact that Nakamura only went 7 minutes in total against Aiden English, does that really show? I want to get you guys' opinion. Do you think that they're kind of giving up on Nakamura a little bit by having him beat Aiden English in sort of a quick way that they have tonight?
Why would winning in 7 minutes be a sign of them giving up on Nakamura, or am I misunderstanding?
Well, to me, it just seemed like that coming off with AJ Styles having such a longer match, I'm starting to get the feeling and, you know, probably hope that doesn't happen, that we may see a triple threat match with Cena, Nakamura, and Styles at WrestleMania. And it's kind of getting me to feel that that may go that route. And I think the fact that he only had that long of a match may have been an indication of that. At least maybe I'm just looking at it from a different angle.
Well, yeah, because you don't want Nakamura taking too long to beat Aiden English. Aiden English is seen as a sidekick and a joke. I think, because I wasn't sure if you were thinking they're giving up on Nakamura because it took him 7 minutes to beat English. Like, you could make the case Nakamura should just go in there and just plow through English because he's seen as a joke. I mean, he's in Fandango territory, and Tyler Breeze in that respect, or, you know, Kurt Hawkins territory. I mean, he's a guy who sings, he's gimmicky, he's Rusev's sidekick. I think damage is done when he can't beat English quicker. Now, they've done some things to try to get English, to give English a little extra credibility. You know, Randy Orton talked about being proud of having a good match with him to elevate Aiden. And it seems like every once in a while they try to push him a little. But, Pat, to me, I kind of look at it the other way, the opposite of what Kenny does. I think Nakamura should have gone in there and just asserted himself and dominated. And then maybe Aiden gets some offense only because of Rusev. But we're talking, you know, 2.5, 3 minutes, not 7.
Yeah, but if Rusev interferes, you know, you'd have people cheering for Rusev. I mean, that's the issue you run in with that. I think they wanted to showcase Nakamura because, you know, but they wanted to keep Rusev at ringside so that people would stay interested to see if Rusev confronted Nakamura. And I think it's really they're trying to serve, you know, they're either overthinking it or trying to serve too many masters at once.
Kenny, what do you think?
Oh, Pat, you just hit it right on the nail. They're definitely serving way too many masters at once. You know, and to me, as far as Rusev goes, I really do hope they have something good for him at WrestleMania, even if it's not a match. Just have him be involved in some sort of main angle or something, just to get him have his moment of anything else. And, you know, I think it will happen. I think he will turn babyface. It's just, I think a part of me is thinking that they're just kind of biding their time, just waiting for the right situation, right plot or something to come along. And who knows, it may come as a result of Fastlane or it may come after WrestleMania. But I think somewhere down the road this year, I think I'll probably just go ahead and say it, he's probably going to be a babyface sometime by the end of this year, at least when it comes to Rusev. That's really all I have to say. I know you got to get going with the rest of the show. And thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Thanks, Kenny.
Thank you, Kenny.
All right, Pat, let's take an opportunity here for you to talk about the show that you recorded earlier today, broadcast actually live initially. You have a weekly show on the PW Torch Livecast lineup. People can subscribe for free to the PW Torch Livecasts. There's 7 shows per week, including a best of show on Friday, and then 6 original shows throughout the week otherwise, covering current events, each with their own theme to them. And you've got a Tuesday show called Making the List. Talk about how people can listen to that live starting next Tuesday and how they can download today's show and check out a theme that I'm interested in.
Okay, well, you can. I think you can subscribe to it live, you know, via go over on pwtorchlivecast.com or on iTunes or many of your popular apps. Or you can sign up for PWTorch VIP, and it'll get and of course you get it ad free that way. But the show is making the list every week. It is me and a guest coming up with a list of the top seven of any given topic. This week it was the top seven enhancement talents of all time, which meant debating the respective merits of Rusty Brooks versus Rocky King and Tom Stone, and whether other favorites of Wade and myself and no doubt Bruce Mitchell. Yeah,
and your guest put it, I don't like calling them enhancement talents. I like to call them wrestlers who don't win all that often.
Yeah, but that was a little bit too long to put in the title. Yeah. But I know what he meant. He didn't like using the word jobber, even though we did actually use it during the course of the conversation. And we've had some other interesting shows. Disco Inferno joined me for the first episode, going over the top seven Royal Rumble moments. Let's see, we had the top factions show with Johnny Fairplay on it, and that's just what we're doing. 5 p.m. Eastern every week, every Tuesday. Making a list with Pat McNeil. You can call in. You can email us, pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. And next Tuesday, Ring of Honor announcer Ian Riccaboni is joining us. And the topic is the top seven Ring of Honor matches of all time, right ahead of the Ring of Honor anniversary show.
Who has been your favorite co-host so far? You had Bob Cook this week, Bill Behrens last week for the top seven omissions from the Hall of Fame. You had Dave Penzer, former WCW ring announcer, for the top seven moments in Nitro history. You mentioned Johnny Fairplay, and you mentioned Jason Powell, who was with you for the seven best wrestlers in NXT history, and then also Disco Inferno. Some great lists, best Royal Rumble moments, best NXT moments, best seven factions of all time. That is a big one. Who is your favorite co-host, Pat? I'm putting you on the spot.
Well, I love all my co-hosts, but I hadn't had David Penzer on the show or even spoken to him much before having him on. So it was great to have him there and get his perspective, because, like he said, he was there for every single episode of Nitro, and he didn't miss them, based on the theory of, you miss a show, you give them a chance to replace you. So we had a lot to talk about with him, and probably get to talk to him again about something else in the future.
And so if you wanted to catch up on these shows, go to pwtorchlivecast.com. That's pwtorchlivecast.com. And under our logo in the menu, there's something called Latest On Demand in the menu right next to the live stream link. And highlight that, and then just drop down to Making the List with Pat McNeil. And that'll bring up all the shows he has done so far. The magical seventh show on Making the List will be next week. I expect the eighth week, Pat, to be a show dedicated to ranking in order the top seven Making the List shows that you've done to that date, to that point.
Ah, well, we'll consider that. And I'm guessing you would volunteer. You're volunteering to be the guest for that?
No. Okay. That I think that would be unfair for me to judge in such a way. Maybe a secret ballot among SmackDown wrestlers.
Okay, I'd like that. I'm very much interested to hear what Tyler Breeze thinks of the show.
Yes, I am glad Fandango stole Bruce Mitchell's gimmick, or my gimmick with Bruce Mitchell, I should say, correcting Josh's pronunciation of his name. It's Fandango, not Fandango. So I was happy to see that. We have a lot more to talk about from tonight's episode of SmackDown, including a... just, I think, noteworthy interview from Big E, a declarative promo that showed that New Day are not all about frivolity and that they can get serious. And we'll talk about that. I know we have some emails on that, so that'll be coming up. We also will talk about just kind of the tag team scene in general on SmackDown with the Bludgeon Brothers and how they fit in right now, because I've got some comments, some thoughts on that. Most of our emails came in about the Big E and Uso segments. We'll select a few of those. And also talk about Dolph Ziggler and some other topics from tonight's show. So that's coming up along with our on-site correspondent. So thanks to the callers who we had time to get to. We got a break away. And when we come back, it'll be time for emails and on-site correspondent. Oh. All right, we are now joined by our on-site correspondent, Michael, calling from Staples Center. We've had people under different circumstances call us after these events, but this is the first time we've talked to somebody standing in line to buy tickets for another WWE event. Michael, welcome to the the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show.
It's good to be on. It's one of my favorite shows off Podcast One.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. Let us know if you get to the front of the line, and we'll certainly let you get your Survivor Series tickets. But what was the crowd like tonight? We hear via Twitter it might not have been a full house.
They covered the top half of the bowl.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was like almost a full house. I would have to say it's like 95% full, if not like almost like close to 100.
Except for the top upper deck, that is.
Yeah, where they covered off. And I think if maybe they would have uncovered some of it, maybe they could have sold a few more tickets.
Okay, that's
good. They did cover, everything that was like available, like maybe like a few seats here and there scattered around, they basically sold out show.
So 10,000 plus in the building.
Yeah,
it's not bad for a SmackDown, unfortunately. I mean, good for them tonight. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, like with SmackDown, usually they tape it down in San Diego. So this is like the first time it's in LA. So I guess more fans are willing to come over here because it's not like a 3-hour drive if you live like in LA and you want to go for SmackDown.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So did you get there in time to see what happened before SmackDown went on the air?
Yeah, it was a match with Mojo Rawley and Ty Dillinger.
Yeah.
And Ty Dillinger won.
Hmm. All right, very good. And then what was the – was there another match or was that the only one?
That was the only one.
And then how did 205 Live go? We have been recording a podcast and didn't have a chance to watch it, but anything stand out to you there?
I just stood for the first match. It was Cedric Alexander versus TPG, Alexander won.
Okay.
And did the crowd stick around for 205 Live? Or I mean, it's pretty early in LA relative to when SmackDown and 205 Live are on the East Coast. I would think people stuck around more than when it's, you know, past 11 at night.
I would have to say, like, maybe, like, between, like, 60 and 70% of the crowd stuck around.
Yeah.
There's a good amount of people out here trying to get Survivor Series tickets as well. So I could imagine a lot of people left early to try getting tickets as well.
Yeah. Now, was there a dark match after 205 Live to entice people to stick around?
They didn't announce nothing, but I do know, like, in the email I received, they did announce there was going to be a triple threat match, AJ Styles, Sami Zayn, and Kevin Owens, but they didn't announce nothing during the show.
And so after 205 Live, it was just over?
Yeah, I believe so. Before 205 Live, though, they did have a mixed match challenge.
Oh, right.
That's right.
Yep. How did that go?
The crowd took for that. It was Miz and Asuka versus Tim Elder and Sasha Banks, and Asuka's undefeated streak still continues.
All right, very good. So talk about John Cena's reception coming out. We got the idea on TV. It was a split reaction, and John Cena even acknowledged it. How did you perceive it, and did it change at all as he talked?
It was a split reaction. Everyone was excited. I think everyone was excited to see him. I don't think no one expected him to wrestle, but that was a full surprise, him in the main event against AJ Styles.
Yeah, kind of a pleasant surprise. It was a good match and a big-time match to see when it wasn't advertised ahead of time.
Yeah, I think they would have, if they would have announced that ahead of time, they could have probably opened up a top part of the bowl and sold more tickets, but that was like a five-star pay-per-view style match. And that was a cool surprise.
Did the fans seem okay with, how did they react to AJ versus Cena? Was it just all AJ except for some women and kids, or were fans, even fans of AJ, just kind of cheering the match?
It was like about 50-50. Like, you get like your AJ style fans, and then you got the kids mostly, and then you got like some adults going for Cena, but it was like about 50-50.
Okay. Pat, what have you got for our on-site correspondent, Michael?
Okay, what was so how much was the crowd into the mixed match challenge? Because, you know, that's a lot of, I mean, that's generally a lot of comedy. But I mean, were people happy to see Finn Balor and The Miz there?
Yeah, I think it was a nice surprise being able to see like some Raw superstars on SmackDown, even though it's not like a SmackDown, like it was during SmackDown hours, but it was a nice surprise. I was happy to see Asuka come out.
Okay. What about the women's match? Were fans into that, or did they? Did it seem to drag with Naomi and Ruby Riott?
It seemed to drag a little bit. You see, like some fans, I guess, going to sessions, restroom, or merch. But for the most part, I think that was like the one match where the whole crowd was going to lose their days throughout the whole match. Well, they did that every match except the main event, but I think that one received it the most.
Mm. Okay, so and that's the only time you saw Rusev was when he was out with Aiden English?
They showed him in the Titantron string earlier in the day, and yeah, he got a pop of that. But yeah, like Rusev is over, and especially the whole Rusev day.
Do you think if Rusev took on Shinsuke Nakamura tonight that more fans would have been cheering Rusev than Nakamura?
Yeah, I think so, because it seemed like more fans were screaming out Rusev Day, even though it was Aiden English, and I think the whole building would have turned on Shinsuke, because Rusev is really over.
Rank the, as best you can, kind of the top-tier responses that babyface has got. Like, how did Nakamura, Rusev, AJ, Cena, New Day, Shane McMahon, how did they all compare to each other? How would you rank them in terms of most popular, biggest responses?
I think initially a big response, I think it will have to go with Daniel Bryan, Shane McMahon, the Rusev Day chants throughout the whole night, and then like AJ Styles. There was a good pop for Randy Orton when he showed on screen. Mm-hmm. And John Cena, like, a little bit ahead of Randy Orton.
How about
The merchandise?
Yeah,
merchandise stand. I'm sorry. Yeah,
before you go ahead, let me finish up on the baby facing, because I actually want to ask how New Day and the Usos and Nakamura compared. Are they kind of in that next tier, or did you forget about one of them and maybe they're in that top tier of responses?
Everyone was happy to see New Day, and initially the Usos did get a big pop when they came out, but then like it turned to boo that kind of right away.
Interesting. They were booing New Day after the first pop. Why was that?
No, the Usos.
Oh, I'm sorry, the Usos. Oh, because they were opposite of New Day.
Yeah, and then I don't know if you guys were able to catch this, but after the Bludgeon Brothers came out and the Usos and New Day cleared the ring, we started chanting, why are you guys scared?
Yes, yeah, I couldn't make out the chant. I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to ask. Yeah, I didn't think that made the Usos and New Day look good. I know they're trying to put the Bludgeon Brothers over, but I thought that was a weak finish to that segment.
Yeah,
especially since they have the numbers.
I know. Not that they're necessarily going to work together, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that threw me off. Like, I'm like, you guys have the numbers. Why are you guys like running away from a fight? But I don't know. I guess it's been that up to creative writing.
Right. What's selling at the merchandise stands? Did you see who's got the most T-shirts on people?
The merch stands. AJ Styles had two shirts, and then like everyone else had one shirt.
And did you see people wearing more merchandise than others? Like, was there a most popular T-shirt or gimmick that you saw people carrying around?
On shirts, it's kind of hard because right now, like I'm pretty sure, like on the East Coast, like. Get used to hearing California like sunny weather, and right now we're in like in the spring time where it's like in the 50s, like 40 degrees. So like everyone's wearing sweaters, but the people that I did see with shirts, you see AJ Styles, Nakamura, and then I did see Bullet Club shirts.
Right, that's not surprising.
How much did you pay for your ticket, Michael? And did you like where'd you sit? And did you like your choice of ticket?
I paid $98. And I sat right above the floor. I was on the hard camera side, and I was like diagonal from the commentary table. And I enjoyed my seat.
Excellent. Huh. All right, Pat. Anything else for Michael?
Did you enjoy the show? Did you feel like you got your money's worth?
Yeah, I enjoyed the show. And then, like I told Wade, it was a really cool surprise to see. Styles and Cena fight. That's like a pay-per-view match, and got to see it where I wasn't expecting that.
What was the crowd shocked by the finish? I mean, did they seem kind of surprised? Like, did everyone kind of look at each other? Like, did Cena just pin the world champ?
Yeah, and then all those like near falls towards the end. Like, we thought like, okay, Styles is gonna have it right here. Cena's gonna have it, and then I thought Styles was going to pull out and then they were going to continue that storyline that Cena doesn't have a opponent for WrestleMania, but I didn't think he was going to make it, I guess, a six-pack challenge now.
Yep. Yep, you got it. But, Michael, any other observations before we let you go and get ready to buy your Survivor Series tickets?
No, well, for LA crowd, everyone was here, like, on time, basically. Just hope that they bring in more, like, at Staples Center more often instead of, like, San Diego, where fans have to drive, like, 3 hours to and from.
Michael, are you willing to shout in the middle of the room, if you listen to the Wade Keller podcast, raise your arm?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, go for it.
Yep.
If you guys listen to the Wade Keller podcast, raise your arm. You got a few people raise their arms.
Just say,
have them yell or something.
Say, I'm on it right now.
I'm on the podcast right now.
Awesome.
Great.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Now you maybe I'll make some friends. Some people come over and say you got good taste in podcast.
I hope so.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for having me. And they're ever in town again, I'll be more than happy to be a correspondent.
Thank you so much. Yeah, drop us a line if that happens. Good luck with your tickets.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. All right, well, that was fun. That was fun, Pat.
Yeah, that was nice of him to call.
I was going
to
say, he sounded like he might be too shy to do that, and I was like, he'll probably say no. He's like, yeah, I'll do that. So, awesome. And some people raise their hands, so that's good. And those who did not raise their hand are going to be like, what's this Wade Keller podcast? And then we'll have more listeners because they'll find out about it. So grassroots marketing. Grassroots marketing. I am waiting for that hashtag WKPWP sign because I think WWE security will think, well, that doesn't look offensive. You know, that's not, you know, that seems like, well, that's probably some gimmick. And so, maybe get one of those on Raw.
Honestly, Wade, I was excited about a half hour ago during this podcast when I saw that Wade was trending on Twitter, but it was some guy named Dwayne Wade. So I'm sorry.
Yeah, I get that a lot. That a lot. Well, anyway, if you want to be an on-site correspondent, drop us a line. Drop me a line at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. And feel free to put hashtag WKPWP on a sign if you want to bring it to Raw or SmackDown and see if you can get it past security. Now that I've said that, they'll be, you know, WWE will be sending a memo out to security looking for it. But maybe you can disguise it and then bring a Sharpie with you and finish it off at the building. I don't know. I'm conspiring here. All right, we are seeing on Twitter that there was a dark match our on-site correspondent missed, and it was easy to miss. Randy Orton beat Jinder Mahal in 5 seconds, or give or take, with an RKO. I do want to note that we got a number of emails that our very happy on-site correspondent last night missed a couple things. So let's, for the record, mention the few differences in his report versus what happened. Eric Denton emailed and said they really effed the crowd on the Brock Lesnar appearance. The live crowd didn't get the Seth Rollins promo where he challenged Miz to the IC title match. The limo was never addressed. I thought it would be Lesnar or Rock. Johnny Fairplay was right. Anaheim might have the record for getting the most guest shots from Dwayne Johnson. It's super easy for The Rock to fly to into Santa Ana Airport privately and get a ride to the arena, and he'd be there in 30 minutes unnoticed. Most of the crowd was expecting The Undertaker. The matches were dull outside of the Miz and the women's match. Braun versus Elias was way too long. And the bonus match was Cena and Reigns versus The Bar, who had already worked a 2 out of 3 falls match. And he says the show had the distinct feeling that Vince was more involved in other things this week. So not a super positive response there. Also, Ryan B. emailed and said, your correspondent had a horrible memory. Hey, now, let's be nice. But, I mean, it's easy to forget stuff when you get wrapped up in the show. But anyway, he says the pre-show match was Tozawa. The mystery opponent for Tozawa was Arya Daivari. Tozawa won that one. And it was Kurt Hawkins, not Curtis Axel, Goldust won that one. And there was a huge pop for Goldust throughout the match. Goldust even tweeted a big thank you for all the love Anaheim and the Honda Center has given him since 1995. So there we have it, just a little additional notes from what happened off air last week, and also an update on the dark match from tonight at Staples Center. So anyway, we will we'll wrap up that segment there and come back and answer emails to wrap up the show. And then remember, two more shows this week, but on the blue feed. So switch over to that on Thursday, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, and Friday, I'm excited about people here in this show. Christian Harloff, former WWE writer, in the very early stages of the reshuffling of the way the writing team was done, and some good stories about Bruce Pritchard, Paul Heyman, Michael Hayes, Brian Gewirtz. So some good stuff from that era. And then also just talk about his experience at Raw on Monday. And we talk, believe it or not, about Roman Reigns and John Cena and the WrestleMania lineup, a big Elimination Chamber, all the developments at Raw, and social media and how wrestlers are using that. Oh, Stephanie McMahon, too, and what it was like to work for Stephanie when Stephanie was just 23 years old, and she was Christian's boss. So good stuff from fellow Podcast One host, Christian Harloff. So join us Friday for that. But first things first, after this break, we're going to answer email questions. And got a lot of emails on the New Day Usos segment, Big E and his impassioned promo in particular. So stay tuned for that, everybody. All right, we are back, and it is time to get into the emails. And we have a number of emails on Big E's promo tonight. One of the stories of the show, Jeff from Colorado says, "Good evening, Wade and Pat. I love seeing that passion from Big E. With the Usos telling them they need to evolve, do you see this as a beginning of a transition, not a turn, but a transition for New Day? And do you see this being a gradual shift to them being more serious? I know we've seen a slight glimpse of this in the past, see the Wyatt Family feud, but I, for one, would love to see them show more of that passion that Big E showed tonight on a more consistent basis. If you read this in a non-VIP exclusive portion of the show, which we are doing, I want to tell your audience they should go VIP. The Fix with Todd Martin is worth the price of admission alone. Your audio roundtables, the Bruce Mitchell audio show, your Wade Keller hotlines all stand alone as a tremendous value. Didn't even discuss the articles. Sorry for being wordy, but everybody go VIP. Well, I will gladly invite everybody to go VIP. Check out what you're missing. I think it is a stellar lineup of podcasts, and you're missing out on a lot if you are not a VIP member. Every single day, Wade Keller Hotline, the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil, reviewing past pay-per-views. Johnny Fairplay, my guest on the post-Raw show yesterday, Pat, talked about his appearance on Wayback Playback, covering ECW. Talk about that just briefly. What the show you're covering now and the show in general for people who are interested in maybe going VIP because of the show.
All right. Wayback Playback is a show where Jim Valley is the regular host. He is off for a couple more weeks because of work-related issues. But we watch an episode of something wrestling related, an hour's worth. We watch it in real time, sync it up with the commentary, and do our own Mystery Science Theater, 3000 commentary underneath it. And we, while we do tell some jokes sometimes and point out the funny stuff, we do try to give information and background for people who haven't seen this before as to what's going on. Every show we cover is, well, almost every show we cover is at least 15 years old. So this is not the newer stuff. All of it is available on the WWE Network, except for one or two times when we will break over to YouTube for a couple minutes. And we think it's entertaining. There's a few trial episodes of it you can try. You can check out on the Livecast site because we've aired every Thanksgiving. We air a free version of it exclusively for our freeloaders over on PW Torch Livecast. While Jim has been off, we had Johnny Fairplay doing a week. My old friend indie promoter Shane Shadows did a week. Let's see, we had Joel Gertner doing a week talking about ECW. And what you voted for the next 2 weeks is the final episode of WCW Monday Nitro. So we'll try starting – the podcast goes up every Sunday, and we'll have guest hosts for the next 2 weeks, and we'll cover what was definitely a crazy and momentous night when Sting and Ric Flair had their final match against each other, when they had the final WCW title match before Vince McMahon bought the company, when Vince McMahon showed up on Nitro, which had never happened, and – well, since Nitro's off the air, will never happen again.
Look forward to that. That's a great show to pull up for the Wayback Playback format. So if you want to be a VIP member or just find out more about it to see if it looks like something you want to try, go to pwtorch.com/govip. It's a way to get a lot of bang for your buck and also support what we're doing here. And in return, we give you a lot of exclusive content, new every day. and also ad-free versions of this show. So, like, this plug will be edited out if we do our job. Also, the Podcast One shows are without ads and commercials, and then all the live casts are without ads and commercials. So you get a bunch of VIP-exclusive shows, ad-free versions of this show and the live casts, and 30 years of archives of newsletters and audio shows and podcasts and all kinds of great stuff. So everything's available at pwtorch.com/govip. So to the topic of the Usos and the New Day, I want to actually read another email or two just to kind of set the table for the conversation that Pat and I that we'll have. Frank from Farmingdale, New York said, when I heard Pat was on the show, I wanted to say, hello, Pat. I hope your baby's doing well and that you're getting at least 3 hours of sleep per night. What are you averaging, Pat?
This week, I think we're at five, so it's getting easier. Yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations, by the way. I haven't said so on the air.
Thank you.
You enjoying fatherhood?
Most of the time, yes.
That's a good answer.
We're at about 2 months, so this is, it's challenging, I'm going to say, as you know.
My son started sleeping through the night permanently without one exception at 6 weeks old.
I hate you, Wade. No, you're lying, probably.
No, I'm not lying. It's a true story. Oh, it was is absolutely amazing.
Okay.
So it was very much on the low end of things. But hey, 5 hours isn't bad at 2 months.
All right.
Now you're angry. All right. So Frank says, just a quick note. I really enjoyed Big E in the segment with New Day. I've been waiting to see that side of him for a while now. Enough with the jokes, the gyrating, and the pancakes. Any chance Vince McMahon moves him to a singles program, maybe after Mania? I think it's time to open that package and see what we have. Have a great night. So there's another comment. And by the way, if you did not hear Bruce Mitchell on the flagship edition of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast 2 weeks ago, get that show while you can on Podcast One, because the first 20, 30 minutes was dedicated to talking about the New Day. Bruce talked about a column he wrote for the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter about New Day and the racist undertones, the history that a lot of people just don't know about that was driving and continues to drive a lot of what New Day are doing. And put it out there for people to, if they did not know or were just not thinking of it, to maybe look at the New Day gimmick a little differently. And so if New Day evolves, it'll be welcome. I mean, it really will. I think that that we saw tonight a sample of the edge that New Day, I think, have in them, but they've just been so busy making merch money and being frivolous and jokey and really entertaining an audience of one in Vince McMahon in ways that are perceived by many as very racist. And they're participating in it. And that's what Bruce pointed out, is what's the dynamic here and why would they do that? Are they doing it knowingly? Are they trying to claim it's ironic? So it's a fascinating conversation. So if you did miss that show, it's a couple weeks ago, the Thursday flagship with Bruce Mitchell. Another email before I throw to you, Pat, from JB from Detroit. All I have to say is, wow, the best thing about SmackDown in weeks was the Uso New Day promo. That's the kind of intensity I want to see in championship feuds. To make it even better, the injection of the Bludgeon Brothers freshens up the rivalry and in-ring action. I like where this is going and hope that it can be stretched to WrestleMania in some form. Once again, in the spirit of WrestleMania season, I want to encourage all listeners to go VIP and stay VIP. The insight and content you will get every week is unmatched and is on par with any other form of entertainment coverage you indulge in. Thanks again, JB from Detroit. Well, thank you, JB. I already got the plug-in, so I won't do that again. I'm going to read one more email because we got some good comments on this. Jeremy D. from Houston says, all pancakes aside, I really enjoyed the New Day Usos exchange, and I think adding the Bludgeon Brothers for a triple threat tag match is a good way to keep it fresh since we saw Usos New Day about 732 times last year. I also think it could be a good way to help Bludgeon Brothers finally gain some traction on SmackDown if that is, in fact, the route we're headed. I'm mostly writing in because I saw something in Big E tonight in his rebuttal to the Usos. The intensity and fire that he turned on seemingly instantaneously and believably. His comedic chops plus his solid in-ring work coupled with his insane athleticism has me thinking he needs to be pushed into the main event picture sooner rather than later, especially with SmackDown being relatively weak on the babyface side in the main event picture. They don't even have to break up the New Day to do this. I think there could be big money in Big E as a singles with a singles run this summer. Any thoughts on Big E's potential? So, variety of emails coming in, Pat, all really celebrating what Big E did tonight and the overall promo. First, your take on it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what the last letter writer said, which is they don't really have to break up the New Day. They have a dynamic where they could have a tag team and they could have Big E, you know, as a singles wrestler going after titles, and could even do six man work on occasion when, you know, WWE finally breaks out those six man titles. And I mean, you got to remember when Big E first came in from NXT, they thought they had their new single star. They pushed him pretty heavily,
Vince was pro, yeah, Big E, and Triple H was, yeah, pro Reigns, Roman Reigns. Like, Vince had to be kind of touched. Sounds weird now, but had to be talked into the idea that Reigns was the guy, not Big E, for a few months there.
Yeah, and I think part of it was, you know, we didn't really know who Big E was then. He wasn't cutting promos where there was a lot of fire behind him. He had the natural athleticism. He just didn't have the skill yet, and that comes from wrestling lots of matches. And I think now would be a better time. Now he's got that. I think if they weren't about to hire Bobby Lashley, they could probably, you know, they could probably use Big E in a similar role and save themselves some money.
What is Big E's singles potential, Pat? I mean, is he someone who could be a true top tier guy? I'm not saying they build the company around him. I'm not saying you have to hold him to the standard of a John Cena, Roman Reigns, Steve Austin, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Hulk Hogan level guy, but can he be a top guy in the mix, you know, for years to come if they break him off as a singles guy?
Yeah, he can definitely be in the mix. He can be one of those guys that that gets elevated to the main event, you know, every so often, and they can use to fill in when a main eventer's out. Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's the guy, but I think he can be. I think he can be a lot more valuable than he is right now.
I agree, and I think that Kofi Kingston and Xavier would be just fine as a two-man team, actually just wrestling tag matches, and then, you know, New Day can get together when called for, but put Big E out there, and I mean, and they could break them up and have one of them or have two of them go heel on the other, or have all three go heel and do the tag team singles, you know, combo act. There's a lot that they can do with them, and I think part of the frustration with what they've been doing is it just, you know, I use the word frivolity, but it seems like that's beneath them with the talent that they have to just be doing these one-note jokes. Isn't it ironic what we just said, and the snarkiness and the sarcasm? And at some point, it's like you've seen glimpses of there being more. And Xavier, PhD, Kofi Kingston, every once in a while, he shows a little edge to him, and you're like, wow, more of that. And Big E certainly has it in him, and he showed it tonight. So I just applaud that. I want to see more of it. Absolutely.
Well, I think part of the reason for the comedy is, you know, they're a tag team, and unless you're fighting for the tag titles, there's not a lot for tag teams to do in WWE. So yeah. I think that some of the tag teams that have stuck around have found a niche through comedy, and I can certainly understand, especially when the New Day stable just sort of fizzled when they first put it together, why they would rework themselves and they're trying, you know, anything to get because they wanted to stay together, just trying anything to get themselves over.
The Bludgeon Brothers, to me, they feel too. It seems like their moves are just sort of memorized and methodical. It sort of seems like a corporate gimmick. They're kind of cartoonish or cosplay, and they're filling a spot, and they just seem like they're like pulled out of a video game or something. And I think we need to get a more authentic version of them, a little more unhinged version of them. I mean, they slow moving, creepy, you know, Luke has the eyes that are kind of creepy, but I want to see them let loose and be crazy. And we haven't seen that with them. And so it actually feels a little odd to see them out there with two teams that are as real as the Usos and even New Day come across. As frivolous as New Day often are, they feel like real people. And the Bludgeon Brothers just feel like they're, like I said, just dressed up in costumes for some sort of play or something. So I want to see the Bludgeon Brothers show another side of themselves and, you know, be a little more Brody and Hanson and have that sense that they're not so corporate and memorized in what they do.
Well, it's a PG show, so there's only so much Brody and Hanson they can do. I think, you know, they came in with the Wyatts, they broke them off, they turned Harper face, they turned Rowan face, sort of. They, you know, broke them up, they put them back together. I think at this point they're there and they're on TV and they're getting paid via direct deposit, and that's, you know. I mean, maybe something will change for them, but it doesn't feel like – I feel like there's more to both those wrestlers individually, and they're, you know, there are – this is a team that's actually less than the sum of their parts.
All right, another question. John C. says, maybe it's been addressed before, but why is it when someone gets put through a table, it's a disqualification, but being slammed on the announce table isn't? That seems odd. Keep up the good work. You rock socks. Well, thank you, John. Josh. Josh. Yeah, that is one of those weird things where it's a there's not really a rule that's consistent in that regard.
Well, I guess if you get a separate table out that's not already set up at ringside and you put your opponent through it, that's bringing a weapon into it. But if you're just using stuff that's already there, that's, you know, that's fair play.
Yes. Copyright Johnny. Yes. All right, Matt from Rhode Island. To say that Dolph Ziggler's gimmick has gotten stale would be an understatement. So I was wondering if you think giving him the Andrade Cien Almas treatment by having a female manager come in and refocus Dolph in getting wins and placing more importance on winning rather than being the best performer, if you think this could be a good idea, who do you think a good manager would be for him? Well, you know, Paige, I've been touting her, Pat, as a potential mouthpiece and manager of a faction that isn't just a couple women, but manage men. And maybe... you know, they've matched Ziggler with women before, Vicky Guerrero, most notably. But a Paige saying, I'm going to get Dolph Ziggler focused and kind of doing what they did with Andrade Cien Almas, it isn't a bad idea. I mean, I you know, people think I'm not rooting for Dolph Ziggler to be a better contributor to the shows than he is. And I am, I've got nothing personal against him. I mean, I think he's really talented. I just think he's booked terribly and his promos are just so like meta, but in a way that doesn't draw money. And so, yeah, give him somebody to play off of and some focus and try to get some main event matches out of him and make this new contract seem like a bargain for WWE.
Yeah, my concern with Paige is, you know, generally you don't want a manager or anybody out at ringside who can't bump because, you know, I mean, well, one, that there's less you can do with them. Now, why you would need to injure a woman in a guy-on-guy match, I don't know. But, you know, there's also the concern that if there's an accident, if something goes wrong out there, that she could be seriously hurt. So...
Yeah, but she's standing at ringside now and at the peak of their concern for her. So, and I think you're right in saying, you know, why she doesn't have to bump. You know, Paul Heyman doesn't really do that much, if at all. It's not like she's not a good athlete. So to me, let her be a mouthpiece and just have her be a manager who serves every purpose except for the bumping part. And she can help, you know, with promos and being a presence at ringside and then doing guest commentary when, you know, when it's called for.
Okay, well, I mean, that can work if she doesn't interfere. If she's interfering every week, people are going to want to see her, you know, people are going to want to see her get her comeuppance, so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she can get her comeuppance in a safe way, you know, but it's got to be, you know, it's got to be a woman. You can't have a man giving her comeuppance anyway.
Exactly. That's
yeah,
true.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's go to Brian H., actually, Brian Hamilton. Do you think there is any chance Becky Lynch or Naomi turn on Charlotte at Fastlane? Something needs to happen to spice up the women's division. Perhaps the next tournament on WWE Network will be a women's tag team tournament. With a new pay-per-view format, it could be an inter-brand title defended in the co-branded pay-per-views. Just my thoughts. Will likely never happen, but it might spice things up. Pat, yeah, what do you think of what they're doing with Riot Squad, Charlotte, Naomi, and Becky at this point? And could we see a turn to shake things up?
I think it's filler. I think that they right now they're using Charlotte and Becky and Naomi to get the Riot Squad over and also to, you know, to have, so that the newcomers will have somebody to work matches with. I mean, I think that I think that they're coming along. But I mean, this actual storyline I'm not crazy about. I think Charlotte and Ruby Riott will have a good match. I expect that what they're going to do to shake up the SmackDown Women's Division is have Asuka decide to fight Charlotte, and in that case, I'm sure that they will feel that they don't really need to do anything with Becky and Naomi and Ruby and all the others.
All right, very good. Pat, thank you very much. Great having you on the show, and we will do this again down the line, but people should check out your Making the List. We talked about it a lot earlier in the show, but it is free and available at pwtorchlivecast.com. You can catch up on the first half dozen shows right now at pwtorchlivecast.com. Just choose from the on-demand menu right under our logo, the Making the List selection, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Beyond Pod or Dogcatcher or Downcast, whatever app you use to listen to podcasts on your phone. Just search PW Torch and subscribe to the Livecast lineup for free, or go VIP to get the Livecast and the shows, the Wade Keller shows, and also ad-free and plug-free, along with our VIP exclusive audio shows, our archives, and so much more. Full details for that at pwtorch.com/govip. You can also get the print newsletter, the paper copy edition of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter. Get information on that by going to pwtorch.com/paper copy. It is not too late to get on board with the print copy revolution. The paper copy revolution started in 1987. If you want to break away from screen time and immerse yourself in 12 pages of dense commentary, analysis, news, results, and flashbacks, and much more, including last week, a column from Pat McNeil talking about corporate wrestling and WWE. Go check out details at pwtorch.com/paper copy. Over 1,500 weekly issues have been published, so why not get on board for the next 1,500 at pwtorch.com/paper copy. Pat, how can people follow you on social media?
You can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Real Pat McNeil, McNeill. That's how my name is spelled. I'm also on Facebook. I'm told I have an Instagram account. I haven't posted any pictures to it. But you can just sort of follow me around, follow me because the other columnists link to me every so often. We sort of talk to each other now on the internet.
I have a football question for you. Should the Vikings invest in Kirk Cousins?
What are they investing?
I don't know. How much should they invest? is he a top tier, if not maybe not top tier, but is he a top tier quarterback who can lead the Vikings to great things?
He's a top 10 quarterback in the league. I'm confused because I thought you guys already had a couple quarterbacks.
We have three, but apparently. And I haven't had a chance to follow all the news the last couple days. Apparently, we're not signing any of the three. So, or at least not guaranteeing them. We didn't put the franchise tag on. I mean, I'm not sure what to think. I mean, we got three good quarterbacks, but we're not sure about their durability or the ability to repeat what happened this year. So,
okay,
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, I know. So it seems like Cousins is on the radar. But like I said, I haven't immersed myself in sports talk this week. I've just heard little bits and pieces. So it's been busy with Elimination Chamber and all the podcasting and all the WWE content. So I kind of catch up on my sports shows on podcasts later in the week and sports games on DVR because my life is so busy early in the week. And it stays busy later in the week, but I managed to squeeze in some sports later in the week. So I knew you had some experience watching Kirk Cousins. So
A lot, yes.
Yeah. So thumbs up. You'd like to you'd think the Vikes having him would give them a better chance to win than most free agent quarterbacks.
Well, if you want to get rid of all of your other quarterbacks, then yeah, you should probably get one. And Kirk Cousins is a good one, and you'd like that. Yes.
Yeah. Well, they're all free agents, so who knows?
All right.
Thanks, Pat, and check out again Making the List. I think you'll enjoy it. And until next time, Wade Keller signing off.